Chapter 5. When morning finally comes, I am so tired that my eyes feel as if they are coated in sand. I've a foul taste in my mouth, so I gargle a bit of rose water, spitting it as delicately as possible into the washstand. What I cannot rid myself of is the horrible image in my head, the one of Pippa as a monster. It was only a dream, Gemma, only a dream. It is your remorse come to haunt you. Pippa chose to stay. It was her choice, not yours. Let it go. I give my mouth one more rinse, as if that could possibly cure me of my ills. In the dining room, the long rows of tables have been set for breakfast. Winter floral arrangements of poinsettias and feathery ferns in silver vases dot every fourth place setting. It is lovely, and I find myself forgetting the dream and remembering that it is Christmas. I join Felicity and Anne as we stand wordlessly at attention behind our chairs, waiting for Mrs. Nightwing to lead us in grace. There are bowls of preserves and great slabs of butter beside our plates. The air is perfumed with the wood-sweet smell of bacon. The waiting is torture. At last, Mrs. Nightwing stands and asks us to bow our heads. There is a mercifully short prayer, and we are allowed to take our places at the table. "Have you noticed?" Martha says in a stage whisper. She is one of Cecily's loyal followers and has begun to dress like her and even to resemble her a bit. They share the same practiced coy laugh and a tendency to smile in a way that is meant to look demure but only seems as if they have bitten off too much bread and cannot swallow. "Noticed what?" Felicity asks. "We've a new teacher," Martha continues. "Do you see? She's sitting beside Mademoiselle Lafarge." Mademoiselle Lafarge, our plump French instructor, sits with the other teachers at a long table set apart. She has been seeing a detective from Scotland Yard, an Inspector Kent, whom we all like very much, and since their courtship began, she has taken to wearing brighter colours and more fashionable dresses. Her newfound gaiety, however, has not extended to excusing my deplorable French. Heads swivel in the direction of the new teacher, who is seated between Lafarge and Mrs. Nightwing. She wears a suit of grey flannel, a sprig of holly pinned to one lapel. I recognise her instantly as the woman who arrived in the dead of night. I could share this information. It might make me quite popular at the table. Most likely it would cause Cecily to run immediately to Mrs. Nightwing and inform her of my nighttime activities. I decide to eat a fig instead. Mrs. Nightwing rises to speak. My fork, which was so very close to tasting happiness, must be stilled at my plate. I utter a silent prayer that she will be brief, though I know this is very much like asking for snow in July. "Good morning, girls."
"Good morning, Mrs. Nightwing,"
we answer in unison.
"I wish to present Miss McCleavy, our new instructor in the arts. In addition to drawing and painting, Miss McCleavy is knowledgeable in Latin and Greek, badminton and archery."
Felicity flashes me an excited smile. Only Anne and I know how happy this makes her. In the realms, she proved to be quite a skilled archer, a fact that would no doubt startle those who think she is only concerned with the latest fashion from Paris. Mrs. Nightwing drones on.
"Miss McCleavy comes to us from the very esteemed St. Victoria's School for Girls in Wales. I am fortunate indeed, for I've known her as a dear friend for many a year."
At this, Mrs. Nightwing gives Miss McCleavy a warm smile. It is astonishing. Mrs. Nightwing has teeth. I have always assumed that our headmistress hatched from a dragon's egg. That she is in possession of a dear friend is beyond me.
"I've no doubt she will prove an invaluable asset to us here at Spence, and I ask you to welcome her warmly. Miss Bradshaw, perhaps you'd be willing to sing a song for our Miss McCleavy? A carol would be nice, I should think."
Anne rises dutifully and walks between the long tables toward the front. As she goes, there is a bit of whispering, a snicker or two. The other girls never seem to tire of tormenting Anne, who keeps her head down and endures their cruelty. But when she opens her mouth to sing, "Lo, how a rose e'er blooming," her voice, clear and beautiful and powerful, silences every critic. When she finishes,
I want to stand and cheer.
Instead, we give a round of brief, polite applause as she walks back to the table. Cecily and her friends make a point of not acknowledging Anne at all, as if she hasn't just sung for the whole room. It's as if she doesn't exist for them. She's no more than a ghost.
"That was splendid," I whisper to her.
"No," she says, blushing. "It was terrible." But a sheepish smile lights up her face anyway. Miss McCleavy stands to address us.
"Thank you, Miss Bradshaw. That was a nice start to our day."
"A nice start? It was lovely. Perfect, in fact." Miss McCleavy has no passion at all, I decide. I shall be forced to give her 2 bad conduct marks in my invisible ledger.